This is Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mitch Tyne.
And I'm Bonnie North. There was a time when it was just people in the retail world that referred to today as Black Friday, the huge shopping day after Thanksgiving. But it's part of the common vernacular today for all of us. And even if you plan on spending no time at all in a store today, it might just be the time you start thinking about holiday shopping lists.
If there are readers on your list, or if you're looking for suggestions for what you might want to read in the coming weeks, Boswell Book Company's Daniel Golden stopped by to offer some suggestions. He stopped by this week, and we talked first about what's facing the bookselling industry in 2018.
Well, there's a lot of exciting and not so exciting things happening. What's been the talk of insiders is the paper shortage. We have been warned by almost every publisher to be on the lookout for more books being out of stock longer. We've been warning our customers. There are a number of reasons for it. Several printers have been gone out of business. There's been consolidation in the industry. In addition,
this does not mean that the shelves at Boswell are empty, however.
No, we've got plenty of books. We just may not always have. At a certain point, maybe on December 22nd, we might not have the book you want, and maybe your online service might not have it either. We had a warning on the Beastie Boys book, for example.
You mentioned the Beastie Boys book. This is already a pretty popular book.
It's a number one bestseller, actually. It's the two surviving members and a reassessment of their career. And a big phenomenon. There's always a lot of music books that come out. There's a big Led Zeppelin book.
I hear there's a Justin Timberlake book as
there
well.
There is a big Justin Timberlake book. The Wilco memoir from Jeff Tweedy is certainly popular in our store.
One of the other trends that I gather is out there is books that are barely book length.
Oh, my gosh. This has been a trend for a number of years. The head of Barnes & Noble actually used to push for really short books. He really liked the idea of something you could finish in one sitting in bed. You know, James Patterson experimented with a very short mystery series.
Stephen King years ago, too, I think.
That's right. Yep. And Stephen King is actually at the trend of this. So the key on these are they're hardcovers, not paperbacks, because they really are for gift giving. They're always $20 or less. And they're really effectively a short story or a short essay. So Stephen King's got Elevation. George Saunders' Fox 8 is a short story that came out. Khaled Hosseini's Sea Prayer. For those who like nonfiction, David Gran, who wrote Killers of the Flower Moon, has really basically a New Yorker essay, The White Darkness. So those are all big names. And maybe we would say Mitch Albom's Five People You Meet in Heaven, his sequel, The Next Person You Meet in Heaven. The one that independents like My Sister, the Serial Killer by Yinken Braithwaite, which is the number one indie next book for December, which a lot of people are liking. It is also, it's a little tiny hardcover.
Would you say, I mean, going back to the original idea, are these books that you would read in one setting or one sitting?
I think
rather?
That's the point, yeah. I think it's also people who say they don't have time. Those time and again, someone comes up to me and says, if people complain they don't have time, why don't short stories sell better? And I don't know what the answer
That's
is.
A fair question. All right. So another trend out there that you have discovered is the oversized graphic book. And
yes.
We were looking at one of these in the studio, and I got to say, it's a beautiful book.
Yes. I have been a huge fan of this trend. They're books that don't fit on a bookcase. And so they're very fourth quarter driven because they really need to be in a pile. Sometimes they're not picked up by libraries because of the shelf space. This is one I've talked to some of my librarian friends in the past about it. But they do make good gifts, and they're you know how you go to in catalogs or the stores, and they have those cute little kid-sized furniture, like the table and chairs. So this is a kid-sized coffee table book for that kid-sized table and chairs in your home. The one I really like this year is called National Parks of the United States by Kate Seiber. Beautifully illustrated, lots of maps. That's another trend that I have seen over the last few years is as we don't use maps, we want lots and lots and lots of maps, but not for the purpose that we use them for.
Right, not for navigating.
Right. Just like paintings are no longer used where we now use photography or digital photography, maps aren't really being used. You don't bring any of these books into the car and stop you know, and try to figure out where to turn.
And the thing that jumped out at me about this particular book is that the illustrations look like they could be from a travel poster from the 1920s or 30s.
Very WPA-esque. Yes. Yes. And it's fun to have them all together. And it's another trend that I find, we see it, of course, with bookstore books, but this idea of getting something that has a collection like the National Parks books. And while you might not write in a novel that you really love, you might, when you go to the, you know, just put a little note when you went to that, like you do in cookbooks sometimes. We went here. Here's a leaf.
Well, you were talking about this. This is jumping around a little bit on your list, but there are books about bookstores, I gather, that people take and they go from bookstore to bookstore and have somebody sign them.
Yes, that's right. The one that's happened to us was called My Bookstore. It came out 6 or 7 years ago and in paperback last year. And famous and not so famous writers wrote about their favorite bookstore in Milwaukee. We were very lucky. It happened just as we opened. And for some reason, somebody got the idea that we were a bookstore worth having. And so Liam Callanan, who's now had a big book with Paris by the Book.
I was just going to say, he's written a book about a bookstore.
That's right. It might even have our address in it, maybe. We have people come in with some frequency and with the book and get it signed.
So who signs it? Do you sign it?
If they can find me.
Otherwise, it is whoever's
no.
at the front desk.
Yes. Yeah. There's a new one that I really like from Gibbs Smith, who's a wonderful illustrator and publisher, called Books and Mortar, a celebration of the local bookstore. And some of the bookstores are still around. Many of them are gone because he's been doing this for probably 40 years. Back when we had physical catalogs, remember these sort of things, he would do a different bookstore for the cover of each of his catalogs, and there are two a year. And we never made it, but it's still a beautiful book. I really like a book just to also, this book that came out called 101 Art Destinations in the U.S., which is sort of like a bookstore guidebook for art museums. And it's got some of the obvious and some of the non-obvious. And I could see you going up to number 50, which is the Milwaukee Art Museum, and putting something in the thing about your notes, or maybe just get the person taking your ticket to sign it.
or maybe like insert your ticket.
Oh, yes. You should do this.
All right. Well, let's jump around a little bit more. And we were talking before about the oversized graphics in Kate Seiber's book for kids about national parks. There are a couple of other large format books that you've brought along at least one for adults. And I was intrigued by this book.
I love it. It's called The Global Economy as You've Never Seen It, 99 Ingenious Infographics That Put It All Together. The modern world of business and technology and economics, even if you listen to the right podcast or read the right books, can be very confusing. And this book lays it out for you as clearly as it can be, with graphs and pictograms. So here's who delivers the goods, who earns the money, and it deconstructs an airplane. Here's one about the value of water, which we're, you know, I think relatively high on. Greenwashing, how to famous economists, business models, and how do you make a car, and where are the rich located? So,
and for somebody who listens to Marketplace or
Planet Money
or Freakonomics or whatever, and understands things but would do better to have somebody literally connect the dots, this is exactly the
book. This will not overlap any of those fine NPR programs, which I all listen to with very regularly. This would completely add to it.
So that's The Global Economy as You've Never Seen It. You have another very large format book. That's the only pop-up book you've brought with
you. That's right. I actually don't like pop-up books. They fall apart, and they are they're a mess to handle. I mean, they're actually spectacular and beautiful.
Right. They're very cool when they're new.
Right. And we've had some of the finest pop-up engineers, well, one of them, at the store. But this is very different. This is only three spreads. It's called Inside the Villains by Clotilde Perrin. And it has three of the most iconic villains you would ever meet: the wolf, the giant, and the witch. Super large, so it's definitely in the trend of oversize, much bigger than most pop-ups. And you can basically open everything and see what makes these creatures of evil tick, from getting inside their heads to their pants and to their pockets, at least. We have his collection of knives, his bag of gold, So there's a lot of people in his hat. So he's not really eating them all. He's just keeping it under his hat for a rainy day. It's super fun. And the thing I also love about this book is normally pop-ups are really expensive. This is $22. It's really cheap.
You've also brought along a handful of books that are great for people who want to read a couple of books with similar themes.
I love figuring out the connections between books. I feel like it's magic. Like I have to say, I might be making these, getting the two books and thinking, oh my gosh, they're so connected. But then you take two other books and they're also connected. But it really makes you think about the book differently afterwards. The book becomes a little more than just the reading experience.
Right.
It's sort of like having your own book club in your head. So I just finished reading Transcription by Kate Atkinson, which is she's the woman who wrote Life After Life and Case Histories, Behind the Scenes of the Museum, very popular literary writer from Great Britain. And one of the cool things about British writers is they can jump in and out of genre with impunity, whereas Americans, when they jump in genre, they think they're slumming. So, if they write that's changing.
Right.
It's really changing, the genre smashing thing. So her new book is a spy novel. It's about a young woman who becomes, takes a job at the MI5, and they ask her to sit in another room and transcribe what's going on between these fascists. And one of the people in the room is a spy. But the more she works with all these people, she realizes she can't figure out who the double agents are, who's working for whom. The thing that people describe it as, it's a real Le Carré. Like, if you like Jean Le Carré, it's got everything. The moral ambiguity. The book jumps around in time the way Kate Atkinson books do. So part is set in 1940 during World War II, and part is set in 1950. And it's bookended much later than that. And the 1950s, the world, one war has ended and another war has begun. If I can fill you in, that's the Cold War.
Yes, thank you. I was with you.
So it's part Jean Le Carré and it's part Barbara Pym, was one of my favorite writers. She wrote in the 50s until she stopped writing for a while because no one published her. And then she was rediscovered as one of the great writers of the century. And she is the quintessential British female humor writer. She wrote about country deacons and university people and women who had jumble sales, but they were so smart and there was so much perception about people's manners and such a sharp humor and also an awareness of the roles that women were given that maybe weren't fair. And so when you read the Kate Atkinson, if you like Barbara Pym, if you put your Barbara Pym helmet on, because you might not catch it because of all the spy stuff, and you're like, oh my gosh, this is hilarious. So I was reading that and I went, holy cow, one of my favorite books this year is Dear Mrs. Bird by A.J. Pierce. Same time period, same age young woman, the London Blitz, it's set in the same time. They could have been neighbors. It's such a different book. This one I compare to Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Society, which was just a Netflix film. So people are – it's awareness again. She wants to be a war reporter. She works at a law firm by day and then is at a phone bank for the fire department because of the Blitz. They're very busy. And her best friend – sees a help wanted sign for an ad for working in a newspaper. She's like, oh, I can be a war reporter. She gets the job, only she's not working for the newspaper. She's working for their women's magazine, and she's not going to report on anything. She's assistant to the advice columnist, or as they call them, agony aunt. And she is the most old-fashioned advice columnist, and she won't help anybody who has any sort of problem that's serious or sexual or violent or anything. So our heroine decides that she, Emmeline, is going to solve the problems on her own. It does not go well. Both books have terrible violence. This was a very difficult time to be alive, but they're so different. And the thing about Dear Mrs. Bird is that she has such gumption and can-do spirit that, like, she has such a positive attitude about things that she pulls through. It was so interesting to read together.
I feel like there could be an entire section of your bookstore devoted to books that take place during the London Blitz.
Oh, yeah, probably.
All right, so those two books together, another couple of books together, we should mention Barbara Kingsolver and Gregory Blake Smith.
Yes, so Unsheltered is one of the major books for fall. I don't always read Barbara Kingsolver, but I looked at what was out and I thought, well, I want to read something that is
It's funny,
popular.
I always get Barbara Kingsolver and Kate Atkinson confused for reasons that are unclear. I just must have seen them together on a shelf.
Oh, yeah, they're very different writers.
Yeah.
I consider Barbara, I kind of see Barbara Kingsolver as a little, if she's close to someone, she's sort of like Ann Patchett with a little more politics. So kind of a River West as opposed to Bayview sort of thing. So her new book is set in Vineland, New Jersey, and it's a contemporary story about the falling out of the middle class. So it's a very Janesville kind of story. She's lost her magazine has closed. Her husband's school has gone defunct. Her son's tech company is falling apart, and her daughter doesn't know what to do. They lose their house, and they move into an aunt's historic home in this historic town in New Jersey that unfortunately hasn't really taken off as a historic set. It is not the Williamsburg that they would like it to be. So, but she's convinced if she can find that there was a famous person who lives in her house, she might get some tax credits. So, so then we go back 100 years or more, and we meet the person who's living in the house when Vineland was actually a utopian community. It was considered this sort of bold experiment, and our hero in this part of the book is a high school teacher who is unfortunately working for somebody, a principal, who does not believe what he believes in, which is evolution. So it turns out, however, that he is not a famous person, but he's friends with a famous person who is one of Darwin's colleagues. And so we know pretty soon she ain't getting those tax credits. But what it goes back and forth, and the stories play off of each other. So like the last sentence in 1870 becomes the first sentence of the next chapter.
Cool.
There's a lot of language play that I really enjoy. The themes overlap. And so you think there's a lot of books like this. A lot of people don't know this, but Anita Shreve wrote three novels that were set in the same house, including Pilate's Wife, and a number of other books have had. And many times it's like the contemporary person finds a journal, and then the journal is, you know, whatever happened then. But if you like that and you think, well, this is too easy, then you have to read The Maze at Windermere. It's one of my favorite books of the year because that takes place in five time periods. It's set in all.
Do you need to take notes as you read this book?
You do. But it's worth it after about 100 pages. All set in the same square mile of Newport, Rhode Island, often in the same mansion. So contemporary times, the age of the industrialists, the robber barons in the 1890s, the Civil War, the American Revolution, and Quaker 1600s.
Wow.
And the stories play off of each other. And the contemporary stories kind of, as I overuse this, but it is beautiful runes-esque. And unfortunately, as time passes, people go, what's that? Should I read that? It's like, then just go read Beautiful Runes. But I really
wish for people
it.
Who have forgotten Jess Walter.
Thank you. Yes. So true.
So there are a handful of books. We'll get to as many of these as we can. But you have included a list of what people ought to read next after they've read some perennial favorites. There is still no shortage of people who are big fans of A Man Called Uwe.
Right.
So there is a book by a person I believe is Icelandic.
Yes, and I can't pronounce your name right, so please forgive me in advance. Yes, this is Bookselling 101. You must know what the popular books are and what to sell them afterwards, or offer them. They don't always buy them, but give it your best shot, and we're helping every, you know, online services and libraries and that kind of thing. So this is called Hotel Silence, and the author's name is, like I said, maybe Audur Eva Olafsdottir. It is her, she's written a number of books before. They haven't all been translated in from Icelandic. One of them won a French prize, which is very exciting. Hotel Silence is about a man who his life has fallen apart in Iceland. His wife has left him. He's learned that his beloved daughter is not his own of his genetic
right.
makeup, whatever. She's not upset about
it. He's not the biological father.
That's the way they say it, yes. And
just helping out.
His business is not good. His best, you know. So he has decided to end it all. But he can't do it in Iceland because everybody's too happy there. So he gets his toolkit, he gets a change of clothes, and he travels to a war-torn country, unnamed, to end his life. And he checks into a hotel with holes in the walls. It's a mess. The owner has left. Her young relative is running it with her even younger brother and looks at the toolkit and says, "Would you fix a door?" And this is the way the toolkit repairs the people's life around him and his own life. It is over with war.
Also sounds like it could be the president's hat with a toolkit.
Yes. The toolkit doesn't pass from person to person, but we'll discuss that later. What has passed around, and this is another insider thing about Bookstore, is the way the recommendations for the book have passed around. So Lynn read the book. Lynn convinced Melissa to read it for a book club, who's married to Jason, who's our buyer, who came to me and said, I don't always say that, we don't always overlap, but I really think you should read this. I think you'll love it. I got two more people to read it, and now we've sold over 100 copies, and we won't stop till we get to 200.
And I just read a review of that book someplace, and it was already on my radar screen before you walked into the door.
I can't believe it. It's just a wonderful book. It's a beautiful package. It's got the rough cut edges, which every so often someone says, the pages were cut funny, but I have to tell them that that's actually more expensive.
Supposed to be that way.
French flaps. The finest flap.
So French flaps, for people who aren't aware, this is a paperback book, but there are actually jacket flaps.
Yes, it mimics the hardcover. And just a pretty, you know,
kind of a woodcut looking cover.
Oh, and it's not, you know, because Ova really was, had the elegance of the hedgehog crowd. There's always been a book like this. There's no new ideas, just variations.
All right. So let's mention another novel for people who are following up from another novel. and that is for folks who have read Gentleman in Moscow. Perhaps not unexpectedly, you are recommending
The Winter Soldier, which I believe has been already on this station.
It has indeed. We spoke with Daniel Mason not long ago, and
he's a delight.
He was a wonderful guest.
Yeah, what a book! This book is I predict, and I'm often wrong, but this is the beautiful thing about pundits. Nobody ever goes back
right,
and checks.
Exactly. There's no rewinding of the tape.
is going to be a phenomenon in 2020.
A phenomenon in 2020.
Was no 2019.
Okay, yeah. I was going to say
maybe even Gentleman of Moscow's second year was bigger than its first year, so maybe
2020.
But I meant 2019. So it is
foresight is 2020.
It is for Gentleman Moscow crowd. It's set in the same period. It's also really well written, straightforward history. As my bookseller Jane says, who was a very enthusiastic seller and got me to read it. It is one character, not seven point of views. And no jumping around in time. And while I like to jump around in time, as you know, not everybody does.
And there are no shortage of books for people who like to jump around in time.
They can have those other books. They can't have this book. Beautifully written. He wrote a book called The Piano Tuner, which was a big phenomenon. Didn't hit the list, I don't think, but was certainly a bookseller hand sell and became a movie. Second book didn't work so well. But this is the cold version of The Piano Tuner. That was really hot. This is freezing. It's also interesting. It's World War I. People love history. And it's the Eastern Front, which we never really read. We don't read about as much, unless we're Polish.
And we discovered in our interview with Daniel Mason about this book that his scenes where he depicts the cold bleakness of a winter in Eastern Europe were actually written during a time he spent in Milwaukee looking at a very similar bleak winter.
Yes, he was visiting his in-laws, and he's from California. It's like when you have a guest and they're like, We had two authors and there was a little snow flurry and they were so excited.
So you just want to say stick around.
it's a little deadening by February. But the other book that we compare it to is another book that people really love, Cutting for Stone by Abraham Verghese, because it's a surgeon. He is a psychiatrist. He writes about the surgeon who is going through medical school to the chagrin of his family. And they really want him to be a war hero, preferably a dead one, so that they can have more
but their own personal
their
martyr.
Own personal gain. Yes. Right, that's right. But he goes to medical school, but before he can graduate, they're so desperate for doctors that they send him into the front anyway, where he works at a makeshift hospital. There's a really great nurse character. If you're a nurse, you will love this book. We have. I did this for my book club. We had two nurses, and they were like, finally, a nurse who knows more than a doctor, the way real life is.
All right. So as we mentioned, there was a Milwaukee inspiration for that book, if not a literal Milwaukee setting. Let's talk about the Milwaukee books on this list for people who are looking for something geographically relevant. There's a children's book that you start with.
Oh, my goodness. This is one of our favorite books of the year, and it is the first children's book that I can think of that is as well done as it is since Gertie the Duck, which you can...
I have my very own copy of Gertie the Duck.
Yes, yes. And they sell out-of-print copies at Historic Milwaukee. So this book is Lulu and Rocky in Milwaukee. It's written by Barbara Josie, who's written over 50 books. Mama, Do You Love Me is one of the most famous ones. Renee Grafe, who is an illustrator who actually is famous. She did American Girl illustrations. She did the Little House picture books. And she actually did some of these A to Z books. And so they actually did a book several years ago on Cedarburg, and that sort of gave them the inspiration.
I believe they have been on this very program talking about that book. Yes.
So this was their idea. They've been working on this book for 5 years. It's gone through a lot of transformations, and it is about a fox who from Michigan who goes to visit her friend Rocky, her cousin Rocky, paid for by the mysterious Aunt Fancy. You only see her fine gloves. and they do everything. They go to the Discovery World. They stay at the Pfister. They go they go to the lakefront lake.
They go to Cafe Benelux.
Cafe Benelux for cheese curds. it is so cute. And the thing is that it isn't just thrown together. I mean, Barbara really came up with a story. She has a theme. She has like what, you know, the whole idea is like that Milwaukee has this fancy side to it. She originally had the fox was a little girl, but she wanted a boy too. And we love animals. So it's an anthropomorphic. So it's a BoJack Horseman for children. No, it's not.
Sadly, the fox is not named Lauren.
Oh, another fine Milwaukee writer. So I really enjoy it. There's lots of – the other thing is it's a really great book for people who are visiting Milwaukee or who used to live in Milwaukee. But if you do live in Milwaukee, you'll find all these Easter eggs. You can spot all these little things that I think someone from here would know.
For example, the cameo appearance by the very building in which we sit.
That's right.
So that's Lulu and Rocky in Milwaukee, Barbara Josie and Renee Grafe. Let's mention a couple of these other books before we have to go. For people with ties to the university where this radio station is based, there is a new book on UWM history.
Yes, it's University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, the first 60 years. I think it's available at the UWM Spirit Shop and online as well as at Boswell. And it is by one of the
Chancellor.
One of the former chancellors, John Schrader. And it is a lovely book, very well priced and wonderful for alums.
So we're having this conversation about a variety of books. We did a conversation on site at Boswell. I had the great pleasure to interview Jim Mustick, who's the author of 1,000 Books to Read Before You Die. What about for people who enjoyed that book and want to take the next step?
And also maybe want a book that's 600 less pages.
But, yes, exactly.
So I would say there's a really cool book called Bibliophile and the Illustrated Miscellany. And her name is Jane Mount. And she has a company called Ideal Bookshelf. And we actually sell her cards and her we kind of sell all things. She is book obsessed. And what she does is she paints piles of books, or if they're the other way, shelves of books. And what she has done in this book is taken her love of books and turned them into a miscellany. So we have like a pile of books about nature and animals with descriptions, books about technopunk, beautiful covers. She's got lists of bookstores, recommendations from people, cooking, dystopian novels. And there's a little essay about each one. Her illustrations for a book lover are delightful. They just make you sing with happiness. So it's a real you know, we are talking about books, and let me just say our buyer brings in a lot of books about books. This is a particularly adorable one, and I do always love to say it. It has a ribbon marker.
And Daniel, we always sing with happiness when you are here.
Ah, thanks.
Daniel Golden is the proprietor of Milwaukee's Boswell Book Company. You can find his entire list of book-giving suggestions, including some that didn't make it on the air, at wuwm.com.